Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, February 25th, 2018. This is episode 1466. Enjoy! Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to call in and talk, let's have a conversation about technology. 888-827-5536. That's toll free. Won't cost you anything to call, and we sure appreciate it, because otherwise I have to sit here for 3 hours and just talk. That's no fun. Not for me. Probably certainly not for you. Samsung had its announcement, its big event in Barcelona. It was evening time in Barcelona at the Mobile World Congress, early morning in California, noon in the East Coast. And they announced the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus. What a shock. Shocking. Actually, the interesting, I think the most interesting tidbit is the price. We thought Apple might influence the market with its very expensive iPhone X and get everybody to say, oh, yeah, here's a chance to really raise the price. But there have been rumors, Samsung probably knows this better than anybody, that the iPhone X is not sold as well as it might have had it been a little less expensive. I don't know if that's true or not. I think Apple's probably selling as many as it can make. In any event, for whatever reason, Samsung opted not to make the S9 super expensive, just a little expensive. If you get it from Samsung directly, the S9 with 64 gigs of storage, which is the only storage level they offer, that's reasonable. That's what, you know, a smartphone should have 64 gig. And then you would decide if you wanted to add an SD card because it does support additional storage via one of those little micro SD cards. That price from Samsung is $720, which is, I think, a very good price. If you want to get the slightly bigger one, the S9 Plus, that's $840. As far as I could tell, they're identical except for size. It's a big jump in price, though, isn't it? $120 more for a slightly bigger screen. It won't be available till March 16th for about 3 weeks. So, well, that's not quite 3 weeks. A little less than 3 weeks. So, and as far as I can tell, I went to the carriers. They are not yet offering it for pre-order. You can go to the Samsung site and reserve yours. And then Samsung will send you an email on March 3rd, they said, and then you can pay for it. But we'll get it in a couple of weeks. If you go directly to the U.S. carriers, you'll surprisingly pay a lot more. It's a little puzzling to me. So AT&T is charging... Remember that $720 from Samsung, $790 from AT&T, and $915 for the S9 Plus. Verizon, $800 for the little one, $930 for the big. Wow. I don't think you get more for your money. It's all of them are offering trade-ins of some kind. So if you have an S7 or an S8, you could trade it in. Samsung, I have a Note 8 I was willing to trade in, but Samsung didn't seem to offer a trade-in for the Note 8. I guess they figure that's too new. No one would want to trade that in, except maybe Leo. T-Mobile, I don't see a flat buy-it-outright price from T-Mobile. But if you multiply $30 a month for 24 months, which is what they're offering for the S9, that's $720. That's the same price. So I guess T-Mobile is offering it at the same price as Samsung, $720 and $840, but spread out over 2 years, which actually is pretty good. T-Mobile's very aggressive. If you buy it through Best Buy on March 2nd, you can get $100 off. But it's unclear which carriers. And again, in many cases, there's trade-in value for your old Galaxy phone. So why would you maybe want this new one, the S9? It looks a lot like the S8 and S8 Plus. It's almost identical. But then look at the back. There's some changes. The camera now has two lenses, and Samsung was very happy to point out that the two lenses give you dual apertures. That means how well it performs in low light. Historically, camera phones, all the current camera phones, the Pixel 2 from Google, the iPhone 8 and 10 from Apple, even the Samsung Galaxy S8 have very, very good cameras if there's good light. They're excellent. There is, you know, I would say close to not only a point-and-shoot camera, but even a somewhat more expensive Micro Four Thirds camera like the Olympus OM-1, or OMD, I guess they call it, digital OMD, or the Panasonic or Fuji. I mean, they're very good cameras. This is according to a DP review, which reviews these cameras. They were able to point out in good light that the resolution of these cameras, thanks to all the processing they're doing, is very good. Of the bunch, by the way, I think they like, and I certainly like, the Google phone, the Pixel 2. But historically, these phones just don't do well when it's dark. Samsung did a funny thing at the announcement. They turned out the lights and took a picture. Because their new dual lenses, the lens for bright light is at f2.4. That's pretty good. And then the low light lens is an f1.5. Photographers will recognize that as what we call a fast lens, a lens that lets in a lot of light. It's a wide open opening. And no, of course, we'll have to see the pictures. You can't trust Samsung to tell you how good they're going to be. But that's potentially good news, especially since they're using the same kind of dual pixel sensor that Google's using in their phone. So it should have some real good capabilities, a lot of processor power in that thing. Might be a very good camera. Might be. We'll have to see. It does one thing that I don't think anybody does. It has a super slow-mo, over 900 frames per second. That's four times the best that Apple offers, more than four times. No, it's actually, I think Apple offers 240 frames a second. So it's I guess it's exactly four times Apple's frame rate. Well, that's pretty good. That means you could make the blink of an eye, a half second blink of an eye, take 6 seconds. They said, wow. Yeah, that's fun. It's fun. I mean, you shouldn't buy a new phone just because you could do super slow-mo unless you have a real application for it. But it's a nice feature. And what it really does is it shows you the speed, the processing power of this phone. Screen is a little brighter, maybe a little bit better. Again, you know, this is all based on what Samsung says, and not that they're lying or anything, but it will depend. I'll get one in a few weeks, and we'll put it through its paces. Yes, there's a headphone jack. No, there's no notch. Yes, there's a fingerprint reader, and this time Samsung's finally put it in the right spot, which is underneath the camera, kind of in the middle of the back, where everybody else, Google and LG and HTC and all the others, put it. And that's the right space. That was always my number one complaint about the S8 and the Note 8 is the fingerprint reader was off to the left of the, or the right, I guess, depending on how you're looking at it, of the camera. And you, half the time you'd hit the camera lens and schmutz it up. So this is good. This is, they listened to their customers. And they were very, surprisingly in this announcement, they were willing to take on their number one competitor. Who's their number one competitor? Not Google, not LG, not HTC. Samsung's number one competitor is Apple. And they said, yeah, well, we have face recognition and fingerprint recognition. We have Bluetooth and a headphone jack. We've got two lenses, but we can do 960 frames a second, and on and on and on. So this looks like a pretty nice phone. It'll be interesting to see how good the camera looks. We'll be testing that. The problem I always have with Samsung phones compared to Google's phones is they add a little bit of their own special sauce to the user interface. However, I'm not anticipating that being it's gotten a lighter and lighter touch. In fact, in some ways, I actually prefer the Samsung stuff. Maybe you do too. Let's talk about it. Are you going to get the new S9? Are you waiting? If you had an S7 or you had an older iPhone, you might be looking at it. Price is fairly good for a high-end phone like that. You certainly can get an excellent phone for half the price. But if you want the flagship phone, that's pretty good price with the latest processors, latest camera, latest screen. I think Samsung, it looks like Samsung's going to have another winner on its hands. But what do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. We'll talk about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll go to the phones and talk about the Galaxy S9 or anything on your mind right after this. I do think the iPhone 10 is the best phone out there. I think the camera on the Pixel 2 XL is a little bit better. A little bit, not so much that you'd miss it. I generally care because of, for a variety of reasons, but apps that I use and so forth, I wear the Apple Watch now all full time and not the Samsung, and I carry the iPhone 10 full time. Well, they were a sponsor at Tortoloha. I think they're good for massive storage. I use a Drobo Mini for a backup, basically, on my Mac Pro. I think for photographers it's a good choice because you need a lot of data, 20 terabytes, yeah. And I like their Beyond RAID is a good solution, yeah. I'm not crazy about them for NAS. I'm more of a Synology NAS guy. But I think Drobo is good for, like, massive USB storage. Well, you know, compact camera. You know, it's funny because I think compact cameras and phones secondarily killed the camcorder. And I think probably most people now, you know, my own anecdotal evidence is that most people just use their phones. People come in here, you know, we have visitors almost every day and they often want to take pictures. And very rarely now do I see point and shoots or camera, or, you know, high-end cameras. In fact, can you flip the... Yeah. So I actually think I probably see high-end cameras now more than I see point and shoots. So it's either camera phones or professional cameras. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. When you call that number, look who you'll see. Kim Schaffer, the wonderful, the talented, the dancing.
That was a groove.
It is a groove.
Oh, I like
Kim
that.
Schaffer taking your calls. You've been lining up the phones.
I have.
Yeah, we've been busy. We started early today.
I know. I walked in. And
yeah, Father Robert was doing the Samsung event. And so you weren't all alone, as you are usually on these cold winter mornings.
I have company.
You have to stoke the fire. Put coal in the burner, put the pot of tea on, and start answering those phones.
And there were bagels.
What? I'll be right back. What? Who should I start with here?
How about Todd in Riverside having trouble with Wi-Fi on his Dell laptop?
All right. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Todd in Riverside. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm great.
Yeah, I called you about 5-6 years ago, I guess, and I talked to you and Scott on a conference call, and I was the guy, you probably remember, that I bought the new house, and I put this very, very elaborate home theater system in there, and I put all the speakers in the ceiling. You know, I had the left, right, center, rears, everything was all in the ceiling. And then we discovered that the master bedroom was right above the family room. Do you remember that?
So when they're watching Terminator 5 downstairs, you're feeling
it. My wife couldn't sleep.
Hey, knock it off down there.
Oh, whoops.
And I was talking to you and Scott about a sound bar.
Yeah. Well, so what'd you end up doing?
I got what Scott said. I got
good.
The Yamaha.
And you were happy with it.
Yeah. Very, very happy. Good. No problem. But here's a strange thing. You're as old as I am, or I'm probably older than you, but you remember our toys before internet? We had to amuse ourselves a little bit differently than the kids do now.
We had rocks, mud.
Yeah. You remember this one, though? This one will break you up. This one is, you got to remember this one. It was a box. It was a little box, and then alongside the box, there was a light switch. And you turned the light switch to on, and the lid of the box opened up, and a hand came out.
Turned
the switch off.
Endless fun. Our kids are thinking, oh, my God, you people. How primitive.
How many hours
of fun. Turning the switch on, watching it turn it back off.
But the reason I'm telling you that is because funny things happening. I've got a Dell. I bought four Dells from Dell. I love Dell. They're the greatest company in the world. And I always get the pro support because guess what? They all speak English. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So they're the greatest company in the world, honest to God. But so I have a Latitude, which is a, you know, an upper end level Dell with all the bells and whistles on it. And what happened was, like last week, I know it's ready for the graveyard because it's 5 years old, and I'm going to buy a brand new one tomorrow with SSD and you know, and everything else, all the bells and whistles. But this one, it just, I'm curious because what I did is I called Dell, and because my pro support just ran out, 5 years. They give you 5 years on your pro support, you know, when you buy a computer. And so I had to take the regular support. So I'm talking to a guy in India, which I can't understand, right? And he does all the diagnostics and everything. And what happened was the Wi-Fi stopped working. And the reason I did the antidote about the switch was because I go and I check it, and it says your Wi-Fi is turned off. So I go in the settings and I go into Wi-Fi, and there's a switch to turn it on, right? I turn it on in about 3 or 4 seconds. It turns it off.
Okay, so let me help you with this. There are a couple of things that could be going on here. First of all, there is on that Dell and many laptops, there's a key, a function key to turn off. It's, think of it as airplane mode, to turn off all the radios, including the Wi-Fi radio. So first of all, look at that key. Make sure you're, A, not accidentally hitting it, but B, not that it's not stuck. It would be very much like that box, that on-off switch. It would be every time you turn it on, it would go click off. So first of all, check that key. I can't remember if it's F12, F11. It's up there in the higher end function keys. So that's number one. Some laptops, I don't think Dell does this, but it's worth checking if you don't have that function key. Some laptops, business laptops primarily, have switches on the side. Turn off wireless switches. Again, this is for mostly for flying. But there are, but you know, it also, there are some, for instance, government installations where they require you turn that off, things like that. So that's number one. Make sure that that switch isn't on. Number two, it could just be a driver issue. And that's where you go to Dell and you get the latest motherboard drivers, because your Dell almost certainly has its Wi-Fi controller and circuitry on the motherboard, not in a separate card or a separate daughter board. It might. But in any event, Dell will have a driver for that. You can identify it in the device manager and see if it's an Intel. It probably is. And if it is, then you can perhaps get a driver from Intel instead, just to see if that works better. So that's the next thing. That, well, I'm going in order, by the way, of easy to fix, harder to fix. So the easy to fix is look for a switch that's accidentally, you know, like that useless box, which, by the way, you can still buy for $14 on Amazon. A DIY version, useless box, that turns itself off as soon as you turn it on, so you can amuse the kids. Really, Grandpa? You thought that was fun, huh? So look at the drivers. Always drivers. There's also in the driver, while you're in the device manager, there power saving mode will often turn off Wi-Fi. So you want to check in the Wi-Fi settings, and it probably isn't. You know, you probably need to go to the device manager, not just the, you know, the simple Windows control panel, which is virtually useless, and look at the power saving settings. And as I remember, there's a check mark where you could say allow a power savings to turn off this card. Make sure that's not on. I think those are probably the three most likely things. The worst case scenario is there's something wrong with it, and that would be obviously not a good thing. There's like physically hardware issues. It is 5 years old. 5 years is a pretty good lifespan for a laptop. So I'd look at those three things and hope it's not the fourth. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Woo! 8888 Ask Leo. It's a shame, you know, the Dell support used to be world famous. In fact, I remember going down to Round Rock to the Dell support offices. I think I knew somebody who was in charge of support down there. I dimly remember this. It was a long time ago. And they had a giant room full of people on customer support representatives on the phones. And they were justly proud of their training. They would hire people who really knew what they were talking about. Sitting at those phones, they had a DJ. I'm not kidding. They had an on-hold DJ playing music. They had a big board up in the room that would tell people, all the representatives could see it, the wait time, number of people in the queue, how well they were doing, satisfaction rate, all of that stuff. So they would get feedback instantly on how they were doing. And they really did a good job. The problem is that's expensive. That comes from a time when the computer you wanted, we used to say this, believe it or not, back in the 90s, the computer you wanted was always $2,500. That was the one you wanted. And you really couldn't get a decent computer for less than $1,500. Really couldn't. Then along comes e-machines and the low, you know, the budget computers. The worst thing that happened, I think, was the netbooks. Remember those? These really cheesy, plasticky, low-powered laptops that were just a few hundred dollars. And they were terrible. I mean, they were the Commodore 64. The VIC-20 of personal computing. But people loved the price, and it put pressure on prices to drop. Now, there's only a few ways you can drop prices. You can cut your profits, of course, and they did that. That wasn't enough. Profits are razor thin on most computers these days. You could cut the quality of your components. They did that, and that turned out not to be such a good idea. They kind of backed off on that, although for a good machine with good components, you're going to still spend $1,500 or more. Most of the machines I use day in, day out are closer to 2,000. So that hasn't changed really. But the big cost savings came by cutting out high quality support, by closing down that Round Rock facility and offshoring their support. And they didn't just send it to India or the Philippines, where labor costs are lower. They also really, I think, stopped hiring sophisticated tech support people. They just hired customer service representatives, and they gave them a notebook. And the notebook is like a decision tree. You know what that is? Where you page one of the notebook says, ask the customer this. If yes, go to page 12. If no, go to page 15. And there's more. Ask the customer this. If yes, go to page 29. If no, go to page 52. And on and on and on. And all, it's fairly rote. All these guys and gals can really do is go through the notebook and hope that they find a solution. Often, there's nothing there to help you. In fact, the only reason I call that kind of tech support, that's the free tech support. The only reason I would ever call the free tech support is just to get a sense of, are you hearing from a lot of people? Is this a problem? A lot of people reporting this problem. And nowadays, you probably Google it and get just the same quality of information. They unbundled support, and the free support you get, if you get any, is very cheap for them. But think about it. You know, a typical support call might cost $35 to $50 or more. And if your profit in a laptop is $150, it doesn't take many support calls to wipe that out. And that's what was happening. So in order to get prices down to where we're going, and it's our fault, we as consumers, we said, no, we want $700, $800 computers. Well, the only way they could do that, really, is by cutting out quality support. Now, many companies offer paid support that is good quality. I think even that, though, is lower quality than it used to be. But that, at least there's that. You know, something. And so if you really care, when I buy, I tend to buy Lenovo ThinkPads. I like those. Expensive. They're kind of business-focused, well-made. And I almost always buy the higher-end support. It costs a few $100 more. There is one company that still offers pretty good free support, and that's Apple. But even Apple's, you know, pushing hard on the AppleCare Plus and so forth because, frankly, it costs some money, and even their margins are sliced. So that's really what's going on. The days of quality support are just gone because we wouldn't pay that much for a computer anymore. People complained. And when your competitors are offering $400 computers, you have to, too. You can't compete against that. And consumer, you know, the cost is hidden, right? The cost of bad support is hidden. You already made the sale. The customer, it's too late. The customer already gave you their money. Support is the biggest expense. It's one reason we get bad service from other companies, too, like your cable company. Your support's terrible, right? Because it's expensive. And if we can cut that out, it's one of the reasons you see these ridiculous phone trees. They're hoping, I guess they're hoping that you will give up before you get to a human because the humans are so expensive. You call your bank, call anybody now. You're going to get an automated voice tree. It's going to go through a lot of, they say, well, we can tell you your balance. You don't really have to talk to anybody. You got a problem with your credit card? Well, just do our automated system. They don't want you to talk. Humans are expensive. Go back to the phones here. Yes, John, Cary, North Carolina is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I have a friend that has an old Windows 7 computer.
Yeah.
It's a desktop. I know that. And we've been trying to figure out why it won't shut down in an orderly fashion. You know, he tries to, whatever the two clicks are, you power and shut down, and instead it restarts. It does shut down, but it restarts.
Yeah.
And the only way he can get it to go all the way down is to hold the power button, and then it doesn't boot clean the next time.
No, that, because what he's doing is he's forcing it to power off. So this is not at all unusual. And I bet you that, you know, that Windows 7 machine is as much as 9 years old. Windows 7 came out in 2009.
Yeah.
And I bet you in all that time, he's never once erased the drive and started over, rebuilt the system from scratch. And that's...
No, I...
Go ahead.
I suggested that to him as part of our efforts. He was not really motivated to do that.
Well, that's the solution. I hate to tell him.
Okay.
It's a lot easier to do that than to try to, as you probably already discovered, troubleshoot this and change that and do this. There's no easy fix for this. It's not, and I understand that's what you're hoping. You're calling me and saying, Leo will say, oh, yeah, well, that's a simple problem. You delete the temp file in the directory C.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's really not. There are a lot of.
Well, what good are you, Leo?
Yeah, what good am I anyway? Occasionally there will be a solution for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
researching it with Google was just very confusing.
Well, mostly because you're going to see 100 different solutions because there are 100 different causes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what you'll see is everybody's, I certainly would do that. It's worth a try anyway. I don't blame you. But generally, Windows especially, we always used to use the term bit rot. Windows, after a year or two, it just gets flaky and funky. And this is, by the way, one of the very common issues. My guess is it has something to do with Windows Update. That a Windows Update is, what's happening is whatever's running on the machine is not giving up the ghost fully. And perhaps it's Windows Update saying, oh, no, we need to finish up. Perhaps it's some process running in the background. But the best way to fix this is to, and you can do this very nicely now. You don't even need the recovery disks that came with a computer. In fact, I wouldn't. I would download from Microsoft. They have something called a media creation tool. Get the latest version of Windows 7 and install that. He'll need his product identity, ID key or, you know, the serial number, and activate that. And that's going to give you everything's going to run better. It's going to be faster. And erase the drive. Don't be tempted to, you want to back up your data and start from scratch. And I guarantee you that'll fix the problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. One of the reasons it's probably a good idea every few years to reinstall Windows, and certainly in the case of the last caller, reinstall that Windows 7, is it won't just fix that rebooting over and over problem. It'll fix a multitude of issues. In fact, it'd be a good time, if you ask me, if you can get your buddy to spend $100 to take the hard drive out of there and start with a new one, start with a solid state drive, he'll be amazed how much faster it boots. You could take that, if it's a desktop, you can use the second drive, the old drive as a second drive. If it's a laptop, you can get an enclosure for it, keep it around as a backup drive. But I think this would be a nice opportunity to put a nice, fast, solid-state drive in there. And the good news is the prices have dropped a lot, which means you can get a good solid-state drive. Boot times will go from minutes to seconds. Programs will load faster. Everything will just feel snappier. And I think that's a great idea. Microsoft, we'll put a link in the show notes, still offers Windows 7 downloadable Windows 7 install disks. But you do need a product key. And it may be in some cases that if you bought your machine from what we call an OEM or an ODM, somebody like HP, you'll have to get it from them instead of from Microsoft. But I like the idea of getting a nice, clean, simple version of Windows 7, not the one HP, you know, puts all its stuff on, or Dell or anybody, you know, a pure version of Windows 7. Then you can install the HP or Dell or whatever stuff that you want. Even Microsoft now, though, I'm really sad to say, this is Windows 10's got a ton of trialware on it, games and things. It just really, they shouldn't put that on there. They even put ads now in the start menu. Hey, you'd really love Candy Crush Saga. You want me to get that for you? No. You have to dig deep into the settings to turn those ads off, and it's more than one place, and it's just very annoying. Don't you make enough money, Microsoft? You don't really need to put ads in the menu, do you? Really? Paul on the line from Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for calling.
I've got a situation where I know you're a Carbonite sponsor, and I can't. Thanks to you, years ago, you got me into Linux. So
good, great.
Carbonite doesn't support Linux, and so last year I successfully installed Crash Drive, but they've now are going to end their consumer backup, and you have to go to the business. And so I've signed up with iDrive because they've got a Linux part that you can back up your Linux computers. But even though I've been exclusively Linux for about 10 years, I'm not really an advanced user. I mean, I'm not really a beginner. I'm pretty adept at using Linux, but the one thing that is going to require me to know how to do for the Linux install is scripting.
Yeah.
They've got an instruction on there, and I was just wondering if you know of any good sites to learn the basics of scripting so that I can, if I talk to the tech guy when I call about it, I will at least have a general knowledge of what he's talking about.
Yeah, so this is the drawback, unfortunately, to Linux. You know, geeks like me don't consider it a drawback because we like getting under the hood.
Yeah.
And so we look forward to opportunities to script the system. In fact, one of the reasons you won't see a lot of companies offering automated backup for Linux is it's always presumed, well, if you're using Linux, you probably have some solution of your own.
Yeah.
And that's probably the case, and people who use Linux probably want to figure out how to do it themselves, and you can back it up to Amazon's S3. I'm not familiar with iDrive's Linux solution. They offer a download. First of all, which version of Linux are you using?
I'm using Ubuntu, and that will lead. I mean, not Ubuntu, but I'm using Debian.
Debian. Good for you. That's my preferred version of Linux.
Yeah, I like it because it's. I feel like it's the mother of all of them.
It is. Ubuntu's based on it. Mint's based on it.
Yeah, right. And that way, and it's not bloated. It doesn't have a lot of.
I'm a fan. Things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very simple, and it's supposed to be really rock solid. So
you'll probably, I'm guessing from iDrive, get a DEB. I don't see by the way, I'm looking at iDrive. I don't see Linux download.
There's not a I couldn't find a Debian download.
Easily scriptable and customizable. Yeah, all right. iDrive scripts.
So if you go to that page.
I see.
It says visit our scripts page. At the bottom of for the Linux, it has visit our scripts page.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So you can basically, basically what they're telling you is roll your own using our storage.
Yeah,
there are a number of other companies that have kind of direct support for Linux in probably a more direct way than this.
Well, one of the things that attracted me is that you can do multiple drive computers and things. And
any solution for Linux is going to be doing that.
I also got this real dirt, cheap first year. So, I thought I would. But do you think that based on what you see there that I could get it running? I just want to know if there's...
That's a lot of work for somebody who doesn't want to become a Linux expert.
Yeah,
companies like Dropbox offer Dropbox for Debian. There are a number of companies that will offer here's what I would suggest. You want the reason you want cloud backup is because you're already doing a local backup, I hope, I presume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I use a Deja Dupe is the backup that I use.
Perfect.
Perfect. I use that to my Western Digital passport drive.
That's great. So you have a local backup, and you're the idea of cloud backup is it's a worst case scenario thing. What if there's a fire and I lose everything in the house, but then I have it somewhere stored off site? So, you could use, for instance, Dropbox to do that, and just say I want to back up and you wouldn't back up all of your data. You would back up just the mission critical documents folder, the stuff you really know you don't want to lose, that you couldn't duplicate anywhere else. There are a number of programs, companies that offer that kind of simplified cloud backup. Dropbox on Linux looks just like Dropbox on Windows. That would be easier. Let me just look at the scripts. But saying you need scripting worries me a little bit. I'm not sure. Are these bash scripts or this command line shell? I've just downloaded them. Let me look at them. They're Perl. Okay. This is, I think if you're going to go to the effort to figure out how to do it in Perl, you probably would be better off doing something a little bit more universal. They're Perl scripts.
Let me ask you this about, you mentioned earlier Amazon. I noticed in my Deja Dupe, they've got, you can back up to the Amazon S3.
That's cloud backup. So you're already using Deja Dupe. Turn on the S3 backup. What you'll do is you'll create an Amazon Web Services account, set up what they call a bucket on S3. Yeah. You get from Amazon, you get two secret numbers, an API key and a personal key that you'll give Deja Dupe. There'll be a place where it says, okay, you're going to use S3. What are your secret numbers? Once you've set up the S3 bucket and you've set up an Amazon Web Service account, you give them the numbers. Deja Dupe will do the same thing it's doing to a local drive. It'll do it to S3.
Great. That's what I think I'll
That's
do.
A better way to go, I think. Yeah.
I want to quickly get in this. It's kind of a complaint about I love my Samsung Chromebook Plus, but there's one I talked to tech support and they can't fix this, but I want to get your opinion on this before we hang up. I chatted with somebody with tech support, and with my Chromebook, I have two, with the screen lock.
I have to take a break, so hang on, and I'll talk to you in a second. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry about that, but as you can see, I was right up against the clock. So what? So your Chromebook, tell me about what happened with your Plus.
Well, I love the Chromebook Plus. I do too.
I bought two of them. I like them so much.
Yeah. Well, maybe you know about this, but I've got a screen lock on it. I set up a digit pin. All right. Well, you have a choice of either doing your the password only, which is your Gmail password, or the PIN number or the Gmail password. It does it. It annoys the hell out of me in that, like, more than once a day. Once a day would be okay, but like two or three times a day, when I open the lid, I've got to type in the password. Boy, I know that password now. And I called them. I chatted with them.
It's not Samsung. It's actually how Chromebook works, and it's to protect you. Mine does that too. I have a Google Chromebook Pixel. It's to protect you. The PIN doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to enter your Google password.
I've never had that on any other device. I've had.
It's the new Chrome OS. It's the new Chrome OS. So they want you to enter from time to time, and you'll see Apple doing this. Everybody's going to start doing this. Microsoft does not, thank goodness, but they from time to time want your full Google password just to make sure that PIN hasn't been compromised somehow. A PIN isn't as secure as a full password. I don't know what the algorithm is for it, but I notice exactly the same thing on my Pixelbook, the Google Chromebook. It is annoying because I have, as you do, I'm sure, a long, complicated Google password.
Oh, yeah, I do. And then I've got the second factor also, but... You know,
so fortunately, you don't have to do that. Now, one thing that is handy, do you have an Android phone?
Yeah, I've explored that, but I don't always have my phone near my Chromebook.
Because the one thing an Android phone will do, not all Android phones, but many will, is unlock the Chromebook by Bluetooth.
Yeah, I tried that. I turned it off because, you know, like I say, I just wanted something. I just think it's a little overkill, in my opinion. You know, because it's like I can understand it. First of all, if I go to if I'm on the same Wi-Fi that I use every day, if I went to another Wi-Fi, I could understand it. But the fact that I'm on the same home Wi-Fi day after day, and to have to do it more than once a day, I could understand. But it's like two or three times a day sometimes. You know, because I'm opening it and closing it, you know.
It has something to do with, I know if there's an update, it will require it. It has something to do with, in my opinion, shutting down fully versus going to sleep. And I agree, it's really annoying.
I'm surprised that you said that because I couldn't even find in Googling it. It apparently is not something that people are talking or complaining about, because I couldn't even find anybody complaining.
I think it's tied to how long it's been asleep, personally. But I've noticed. I have the same exact behavior, and it's not on the Samsung. It's on the Google Pixel Book, the latest greatest Google Chromebook. So I think it's actually Chrome OS. And I think what happens after a period of time, it says, "All right, the pin's not going to work now. You're going to have to enter your full password."
Yeah, I pretty much, was given that answer from the guy that I chatted with, that there's no way to fix it. So, but I love the Chromebook. It's, like I say, I sold my iPad through Gazelle, and I bought this, and I got a real good price on it.
Good. Here. I'm very happy with it. I love the Pixel Book, and that Samsung Chromebook Plus is the best low cost, I think. It's not that low cost, but it's really a nice unit. I got one for my daughter for college.
Rock
she
solid,
loves it.
You know,
rock solid. I agree with you. It's very annoying. I just think it's Chrome OS doing that. I don't think it's Samsung.
But when you talk about the safety of the Chromebook, is it still, like if you're doing your email, you say, over the years I've always watched, clicking on links in email. Are you still, with the safety of the Chromebook, do you still have that issue?
It's not nearly as risky. The reason you don't want to click on links is because generally it will, in some cases, take you to a website that's got malware on it or install software with malware. But none of that's, it's all for Windows. So none of that's going to affect you on a Chromebook.
Yeah, I just recently saw when I was using my Chromebook, it said we removed this extension because of malware. And that's kind of interesting that all behind the scenes they just said, we've removed it.
Right.
Yeah.
What sometimes happens, and it's been happening a lot lately, is somebody will make an extension, Google will approve it, it's in the Chrome Web Store, and then that extension is sold to somebody less honorable, and they start doing stuff like putting ads in via the extension. The extensions are the one risky thing on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
So be careful about what extensions you install. Because
one last quick thing: are we going to get any IoT routers that settle that problem of the IoT security? You know, the fact that that it's such an easy entry into your. Are we going to get anything that's easy to install? Because I know you've got to talk about on security now that edge router, but that's kind of complicated for the average person.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would bet you that somebody will address that soon. Some of the mesh routers I know offer, my Plume, for instance, and I think the Eero might do this as well, allow you to set up an internet-only Wi-Fi account that isolates it. And I suspect, I'll have to get Steve Gibson to look at it, but I suspect that this is the point of it. It's part of their guest account feature. So you can, on Plume do this, you can say this guest account has full access to the network or this guest account can only use it to go online. And it's my guess that does in fact do what Steve says, which is isolate it so that if you use that account for your IoT devices, they will work, but they won't become a backdoor to your network.
I have TP-Link power line adapters.
Yeah, they don't do that yet. It's going to be the
Would I be able to use that TP-Link power adapter with the Eero or the Orbi?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because I'm thinking about getting the Orbi, and still using my existing. I've got
you
two
sure
power line.
Yep.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot for your help.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, the website, techguylabs.com. Great place to go if you're listening to the show and I say something, say, I got to write that down. What was that Leo said? I got to write that down. No, don't write it down. You're busy driving or operating heavy machinery. Don't write that down. Just go to the website later in the day. All you have to remember, the only thing you have to remember from the show, techguylabs.com. And you might say, I know what you're thinking. Oh, Leo's pushing us to the website because he's going to make money off of us. Nope. There's no charge. Website is free of charge. No sign up even. techguylabs.com. 888-827-5536. That's the number that Brian in Nashville, Tennessee called. Hi, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
Wonderful, Brian. Wonderful. How are you today?
I am hanging in like a hair in a biscuit.
Ah, you did it again.
And I wasn't.
I almost didn't fall for it. You noticed that. I paused and I thought, oh, I'm going to give it to him.
Yeah, I know. I thought at some point you'd just like, okay, I'm not going to fall for it this time. Oh.
What can I do for you, Brian?
Well, like I said, after 2 years, I'm still more and more trying to integrate into the Mac world from Windows. But the big thing now, and I guess it's an issue on both Windows and Mac world, is documents and receipts and all that kind of stuff that you do. For instance, one thing that's changed for me in the past is I pay all my bills online.
Okay.
And I have a lot of documents I like to store, and I like a lot of files I like to keep track of, and a lot of things on the internet I'd like to keep track of. And I know you have the gentleman on from iMore a lot on the
Rene Ritchie. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I have an opportunity. Like I said, they have half off on the Devin Think.
Oh, I love Devin Think, but that is a clunky behind program.
It is not
elegant like most Mac programs, yet I love it.
I know. I'm an IT guy, so I don't mind a little bit of...
Let me tell people what Devin Think is. It's a database program.
Okay, go ahead.
And the interface is a lot like email. So if you email, you get columns, you have folders, you have individual postings. Devin Think is really designed for you to take notes, to keep notes. I've known about it for years. It's one of the oldest Mac programs, and I ended up paying the top dollar for it. They have several different versions. I got the high end version, and I just use it as kind of a data store for everything. One of the reasons I do like it is it syncs between iPad, iPhone, and iMac. So there's a Devin Think portable, Devin Think for the mobile devices. So, for instance, when I plan my travel, I like to take notes, keep track of my itinerary, where, you know, have to-do lists, things like that. I can do it on my desktop in Devin Think and have it on my phone so that when I finally do make that travel, all the details that I've been storing all this time are there. So I like it for that purpose.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if I want to buy it. Like I said, it's half
off expensive.
Right now with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's half off right now through iMore.
Good.
But, again, maybe my solution is not software.
Tell me what you want to do.
Process.
What I want to do is, again,
I'm one of those, I guess for lack of a better word, nut jobs that is, I'm not a millennial. I'm almost 60. I'm big on privacy. I have nothing to hide, but I'm just a privacy nut. I use Trezorit.
So, Trezorit's great. Devin Think is encrypted. So yeah. It uses Dropbox, or you can use, I guess you could use your Trezorit. You could use, but it syncs automatically with Dropbox, and it encrypts. So it's not, it's, you don't have to worry about losing control of the files. Yeah. So your idea is, what kind of documents do you want to store? What are you talking about?
Well, here's, it's pretty much everything.
Okay.
I mean,
DevonThink is not suitable for that. DevonThink is not for that. What you want to do is keep using Trezorit, which is a great solution. It's like Dropbox, but unlike Dropbox. So here's the problem with Dropbox. Dropbox, and they've admitted this, it's not HIPAA compliant. It's not compliant with any security or privacy standard for one reason. They have the key. So Dropbox, and this is actually kind of a necessity for deduplication. And this is in their interest, not yours. But for Dropbox, if there were a rogue employee at Dropbox who wanted to look at your files, he could. The only way to prevent that would be for you to add an extra step of encrypting your files locally. You know, maybe use a zip program and put a password on it or some form or the password protection in Microsoft Office, and then store it in your Dropbox folder. It's not secure. Trezorit, which is a Swiss company, is exactly the opposite. They have no access to your data because you encrypt it. Their software encrypts it with a passcode that only you have access to. So you can totally do what you want to do by making your documents folder be a Trezor or multiple Trezors. When you're using it, it will appear to be unencrypted. But as soon as it starts syncing with Trezorit on their servers in Switzerland, it will be encrypted before it goes out on the internet, and it will stay encrypted on their servers. And according to them, and I do trust them, but I guess I have to add that caveat. You know, according to them, the way it works is only you have that key. So I think that is a solution for what you want. Now, what I do, and maybe this is another way to do it. If you don't even want to trust this Swiss company, is go out and get a network attached storage solution. I use Synology. I've mentioned this before, and what I don't actually store my documents on the cloud. I store them on my server, my Synology network attached storage server, and then I synchronize that to all of my computers. So I have a documents folder on there. It's actually fairly large, several hundred gigabytes of storage that's on a Synology storage server in my home, in my closet. And I synchronize all of my machines, the machines I have here, the machines I have at home. That documents folder is identical on all my machines. If I change anything in the documents folder here, it is synchronized back to the Synology. And I'm the only person who has access to it. It's encrypted on the Synology, so even if somebody took that hard drive physically out of my closet, they couldn't do anything with it. It's encrypted in transit. There's nothing they could do to get into it. Synology doesn't have access to it. It doesn't store it on anybody else's servers but my own. If you're really a privacy nut, this is the way to do it. Synology also offers an Evernote replacement, so I use their note solution. I use their backup solution, and I use their synchronizing solution. It's kind of like Dropbox or Trezorit. But unlike those solutions, those third-party solutions, I don't store anything on their cloud. Now, you might say, well, Leo, what about backup? And that, for that reason, you might want to still use Carbonite. Or you can, if you don't mind spending money, you can have multiple Synology NASs, one at work and one at home, for example, that synchronize. That way, if there's a disaster in any one place, you still have the data. Because I'm synchronizing that documents folder to laptops and computers all over the place, I feel like that's my backup. I have many copies of everything at home and at work. That's sufficient for me. Very important is to make sure that each of those machines is secure because you have copies of your documents there. So that's another thing. Whenever you set up a machine of any kind, Windows, Mac, Linux, in the setup process, you almost always have the option to make it encrypted. Do that. Use File Vault on a Macintosh. Unfortunately, Windows Home does not offer BitLocker. Get Windows Pro, then you can use BitLocker. Linux, most of the time when you install a Linux system, will give you the option of encrypting the disk. Always encrypt your disks. That way, if somebody steals one of my laptops, they still haven't stolen my documents. They can't get into those. So that, to me, this is an adequately safe solution that trusts no one. But it does cost money and take some time because you have to set it up. If you know, so I think that's the best way to do it. That's my that would be my recommendation. Get a network attached storage. There are other companies, of course, that are very good. I use Synology, and I wish they were a sponsor because I should be getting paid for this endorsement. We shall return. More of your calls in just a bit. What do you do? This is a good question, actually. Brian brought up a good question. What do you do to keep your stuff safe? 8888 Ask Leo. We're rocking and rolling on the Tech Guy Show, 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up in about 15 minutes. I think it's time for an assignment review. So that'll be interesting. 888-827-5536 if you want to talk high tech. Line one, Nick, Marina Del Rey. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Are you there, Nick? He's wandered off. Happens sometimes because I know we keep you on hold a long time. So tell you what I'm going to do. Let me put you on hold for a second here, and we'll get you back in a sec. Get somebody to wake you up over there. Wake him up. He's there now? Okay. Nick, hi Nick. My pleasure. Kim woke Nick up. She said, "Nick, wake up!"
I had you on mute.
There you go. That'll do it.
Didn't want to disclose anything that was going on in the background.
I don't blame you. And we'll let you get back to whatever you were doing in a moment. What can I do for you?
So here's the deal. I have an iPhone 6S. It is currently my backup phone. It used to be my primary phone.
Okay.
I purchased it the day the 6S came out, I believe September sometime of 2015. And I was subject to the recall effort because of the battery problem.
Right.
And I subsequently got a new phone beginning of last year and tried to unlock it. I traveled to Europe quite a bit. And neither T-Mobile, to whom it was locked, nor Apple Tier 2 support have been able to unlock it for me. I've tried SIM cards in not only
so team. What does T-Mobile say? I mean, they're the ones who should unlock it. What do they say?
Yeah, well, the thing is that T-Mobile says that, well, Apple sent you the new phone because it was under their warranty.
Oh, your phone number is no longer associated with the 6S?
No, it absolutely is.
So you have two phone numbers.
Yeah, and they're both with T-Mobile.
And as long as that T-Mobile number is still active with a 6S, T-Mobile should be able to unlock it.
I spent 52 minutes on the phone at a very expensive cost.
Oh my God. So what their position is, well, you've bought a new phone.
Yeah.
But you're using the old phone still. It still has you're using it.
Well, T-Mobile told me, well, the phone came from Apple because it was a...
Oh, you bought it from Apple.
Product. I did purchase the product originally from Apple, but I did purchase it locked to T-Mobile.
As a T-Mobile phone.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And Apple says, well, it's locked to T-Mobile. It's T-Mobile's problem, and T-Mobile
right.
tells me the opposite.
I don't understand why they would think it's Apple's problem. It's locked to them, not Apple.
That's what I thought as well. And I spent, I think, $30 on the phone with them while in Austria incurring roaming charges.
Oh, my God.
Trying to unlock this.
Are you home now? All right. Here's what you do.
Back in the United States.
Here's what you do. You tweet. This will work. Tweet John Ledger. John Ledger. I'm not kidding. He pays attention to his tweets. Tweet him and say, "What the heck, John? I have a T-Mobile phone. I want to unlock it. But you guys say you can't. It's on your system. That's bogus. I still don't understand. Apple has. What does this have to do with Apple? It's transferred you.
Well,
over.
Apple sent me a replacement phone because there was a problem on the 6S regarding battery life, and it would say.
Oh, so you have two. You have two 6S's.
No, I have a.
Or whatever. You have two iPhones. And what? But both of them, they have distinct T-Mobile phone numbers.
They do.
This is bizarre. And you went to Tier 2 support. You went to higher level support. So I have to presume.
Yeah, no. And I spent quite a bit of time on the phone. And T-Mobile and Apple conferenced in with me, which I was shocked that it would even happen.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you got the best
zero results.
Support with no results at all. That's crazy. All right, so I'm thinking there's some more complicated system that they've got that requires Apple and T-Mobile to cooperate, but they couldn't figure it out. What did they do at the end? Did they just throw up their hands and said, well, sorry?
The T-Mobile representative I spoke with said, well, here's my last-ditch effort. I'm going to try and unlock your phone, and if this doesn't work, you're on your own. You're going to have to deal with Apple. And he tried it, and subsequent to that, obviously,
have you just, out of curiosity, tried another SIM in it?
Yeah, I have. I've tried SIMs that were local to both Vienna, Austria, on a T-Mobile network, nonetheless, as well as in the United States, and it's locked, and I'm unable to unlock it when I insert the new SIM.
So it says this phone is locked to the T-Mobile network. You can't use it.
It doesn't say it's locked to the T-Mobile network. It's just when I put in the PIN number, it doesn't accept it. But I have also put in that SIM card in my current 7S or 7 Plus, and it unlocks immediately when I type in the number.
Somebody from Apple or T-Mobile who's listening right now, can you tell us what the heck is going on? And I still would tweet John Ledger, the CEO of T-Mobile, and say, John, no one can solve this. I even asked the tech guy on national radio, and he said, well, it's T-Mobile. Because you're paying T-Mobile to use this phone. They should be able to unlock it.
Yeah, well, I use it just fine on the T-Mobile network here in the United States. Like I said, it's a backup phone, but when I travel internationally,
you want to use
that as my navigation, and I use my current as a camera. So
The only blessing is here in T-Mobile, you could still use it in Austria and anywhere else because T-Mobile has free international data. I mean, it's not super fast, although my experience in Austria was it was fast.
Like 1 megabit,
I was getting pretty good speeds, not LTE, but 3G speeds in Austria. So
is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting to hear. And you're a T-Mobile subscriber.
Yeah. I use both Google Fi and T-Mobile for the same reason, that free international data and and free international texting. And then, but it's still.
Yeah, no, it's why I switched to T-Mobile.
Yeah, it's still.
I think I love it.
It rankles me that they can't, because it's you're paying them a monthly subscription. They should be able to unlock the phone. It has to do, I guess, because of the replacement with, there's something about this phone that's not usual. Somebody, T-Mobile, Apple, call me. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's see if we can help this guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Very strange. So you did the right thing, which is, you got as far as anybody's going to get. I have to think it's the replacement thing.
That's what I think as well. And apparently, there was a problem with the original 6S that it was telling you a certain battery life, but immediately, if it said you were at 18%, in 3 seconds, it would turn off.
Yeah.
And that was my problem. And it was a certain serial number.
Yep. I remember that phone fix. Yep.
Yeah. So that was one of my phones. And so I went to Apple and they said, well, we're not going to send you a new phone. We're going to send you a replacement battery. And I said, no. Send me a new phone. I paid full price
for
this.
Good for you.
Out the door. And they did, but now I'm stuck in this situation.
And by the way, all the more reason it should be unlocked. You've paid in full.
Yeah. I pay both for
you own that phone. Damn phone.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand this one. I just don't understand this one. This, normally I would say call the FCC, but they're busy doing other things. So
no, that's what my initial question to you was going to be. Are there any legitimate unlocked services? I don't care if it costs me $50, $100, $150.
Yeah.
It'd be worth it to me.
I think they're all pretty sketch.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I haven't submitted due to
I wouldn't do that.
Credit card fraud on numerous accounts that I've given my credit card to in the past.
I would stay away from that. I think that's not a good idea.
Okay.
I just don't know.
It's pretty obscure. I'm the only person in the world with this question.
You're not the only one, but you're one of few. You're one of a very few. I am baffled. I don't know. But this show is heard in Cupertino. So maybe somebody will.
John Laguerre is on the message boards right now. But hopefully I can tweet out to him, like you said.
Yeah, if you tweet him, he's responsible. He has a whole team of people that pay attention, and they don't want bad publicity. I bet you they could figure it out. So the other thing, somebody in the chat room is saying, I wouldn't do it online, but you could go to one of these mom and pop cell stores. They're not owned by T-Mobile.
Oh, the non-company owned.
The non-company owned store.
T-Mobile branded still.
I find these guys are pretty good.
Yeah.
And yeah. They may have ways.
Okay.
It'd be worth a visit. I keep one in my back pocket here in Petaluma because they're always good for, they're useful.
Well, it's I'm in LA, so
yeah,
I could imagine
there's going to be somebody. Yep. If they sell a service for all the carriers, then they want you as a customer. They don't care about the carriers.
So I should go to ones that aren't branded as T-Mobile.
Yes. It'll say T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T.
AT&T, yeah. All the
U.S. Cellular.
Very good.
That's the guy you want, the independent. Hey, I got to run. Cool. Nice to talk to you, Nick. Have a good one.
Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mr.
Hello.
Mr. Photographer.
No assignment review today. I have to move this out by 1 week.
I was just looking for the email. Good. All right.
I have a bunch of fun toys that I can show off.
Oh, toys is better.
Yes, I brought some toys.
Toys is always good. Let me brighten you up, Chris.
Oh, now I look shiny.
So you didn't get your system fixed, huh?
It's a bit of a makeshift setup, so I hope it'll hold up.
It's working. It's good.
Doing my best here.
It's good. You're gonna
still
get the
good camera, though.
You're gonna run out and get the S9.
I'm an Apple guy.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I see T-Mobile's offering me a deal. Let me see.
Oh, okay.
Let me see what they wanna.
What's special about the S9? I haven't even looked because I was so busy.
One F1, two lenses, one F2.4, one F1.5.
All right.
That magic music means it's time for Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru. He hosts podcasts called Tip from the Top Floor. He also hosts great workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. And I was wrong. We're not going to do an assignment review. We'll do it next week. So we have one more week, right, Chris? What's the topic?
My apologies for not doing the assignment review this week, but I was so busy over the weekend that I was doing something else. The assignment review is the assignment is repeat.
Repeat. Well, that's appropriate.
And
we'll repeat it next week.
We'll repeat not reviewing it this week. Just
next week.
The reason I have to delay this is because I spent an entire weekend teaching, and I was teaching a photo workshop about light. And one of the things that I bring on these workshops is, it's this cardboard box full with stuff. And I call it my macro box, and it's a really interesting collection of little toys around light, most of them LED based, and it's a really good tool to learn photography. It's a really cheap way to get started, and I call it my macro box because it's mostly small lights that work really well if you want to shoot macro and light things in an interesting way. Have you ever seen any of these? I'm holding up bunch of little.
They look like USB keys. What are they?
Well, they are. You can get those for like five of them for $10 on Amazon. What you want to look for is PCB dimming keychain lights. So they are PCBs. They are boards, and with a bit of electronics on, some LEDs on, and a USB plug at the end. And what you do is, and this is how this all started. What you do is you get some cheap USB power bank, a little power supply, and you plug one of those in, and when you tap on the back, light comes on.
Whoa, it's like a little flashlight almost.
It's like a little flashlight, but now, of course, the dimming ones, you just press the back and you dim them up and down, you make them brighter or darker.
I'm looking on Amazon, I see four for $10.
For example, there are even some sellers give you even more. They're all very similar.
Now, are they bright enough? I mean, do they help your photography? That doesn't look that bright.
Of course they do.
Oh.
Because now if you want to shoot something that is small, let me just grab something here. Now look what happens. You can now play with the light. You can experiment, move it around that thing and see what that light does and take photos with a macro lens of something interesting. Now, this is how it started. I have like 20 of these little things here.
This is really cool. So each USB key has six LEDs on it. That actually is probably fairly bright, right?
Some have one on them, some have three on them, some have six on them. Wow. They come in different varieties. And some are dimmable, some are not.
Yeah, bunch of different models on Amazon.
Yeah, and that's a really cool toy. Now, of course, you get one of these cheap $5 to $10 USB power banks.
I have a bunch lying around, right? You know,
that's plenty good for that. Yeah. Now, you might want to take... You might want to take that light out of the power bank and put something in between so you can move it easier around. And that's where this next thing comes in that I found somewhere.
So just an extension cable, right? A USB extender.
There is a USB gooseneck extension.
Oh, I like that.
You put that in there. Then on the other side, you put the light in. And now
Amazon
you have
should make a Chris Marquardt bundle. This is people who bought the... So I found... Here's the Wawa... Or Waha, 10 pieces for $11.99. So it's $1 each. Dimmable LED keychain lights.
You can also put them on a keychain. You always have a little light with you. If you have a USB port with some power on it. Now, you can have multiple of those, of course. Again, I have like six of those goosenecks.
Now, I noticed that these have different color temperatures. They have five warm and five white. What do you recommend? Does it matter?
I like the warm ones just because they make a more pleasant light to my eyes. But if you know how to deal with white balance in your camera, you can use the cold white ones and just warm them up in white balance. Now, here, that's just the beginning, okay? This is just the beginning.
Oh, man.
Of course, there are plenty more. Let me grab...
So,
another
I'm getting that and a couple of gooseneck USB extensions. All right. Okay. What else?
Right. these ones, I don't know what they're called, but here is a little, it looks like a little half dome thing. It's pretty much also a light. Now, it's a bit bigger than what you would get from these little tiny point lights. So, you have a bit of a, it's like a little soft box, you know, a little... And you can see, I can light my own face with it. So you can experiment and play with light this way.
See, I think people with camera phones, this is kind of a cool and lightweight way to really enhance your camera phone photography.
Now, here's another one that I then found. And this is an LED, what do we call it? An LED strip of sorts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You put that in there, you tap on it, and it comes on. And now it's a
wow.
It's a strip size LED light. And look, I mean just look what that does to your face. If you move that around, you can experiment with light coming from different directions, from below, from the side, maybe even from behind, and see what that does on your hair. It's just brilliant to do. To experiment with that. If you get a couple of those, a little smaller studio setup, a little tabletop studio, that's the kind of lights that I would use. And we're talking maybe $5, maybe $10 for one of these. So certainly on the affordable side. My entire macro box is maybe $100. So LEDs are amazing. There's now even interesting form factors. Let me show you another one. Here's one. It's a little audio jack and a bunch of lights on it.
What?
And what you do is you put this, if you have a smartphone that has an audio jack, you put this in the audio jack and you have a selfie light.
The audio jack has enough power to power the LEDs?
No, this one comes with a battery.
Oh, all right. But the point of the jack is just to hold it in place. I get it. Okay.
And last but not least, one that I found, you know how ring lights give you that very special...
Yeah, see, I was going to ask you, because I like ring lights.
Okay, here's a small ring light that clamps on your smartphone.
Oh, man.
On the top, and now you can use this as a selfie light.
Oh, Kim Kardashian's going to love this.
She will love that, yeah. So that's... Yeah, that's my macro box. The LED space has so much interesting and cheap lights that you can play with, that you can use. Even if you do a regular studio shot and you need to brighten up some little thing there in the background, just put one of these little LED lights behind it and you have a little bright spot there. It's just so versatile and you get a really cool applications out of these.
This is hysterical. And it really has been a breakthrough that, you know, for a long time, LEDs we've had LEDs, light emitting diodes, little lights that you just put a little electricity and 5 volts in, and they light up. But the problem was they were red. Remember, all the LEDs were red, and
they were the only ones they could make.
That's all they could make. It was only a few years ago they figured out how to do other colors, and chiefly how to do white. That's the key. And once you could do white, these things, you can make light bulbs. You can make. We use LED lights in our TV studio. I'm looking at some right now. This has been a revolution, and they've gotten cheaper, and they never burn out. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So $12 for 10 of these USB, 6 LED USB lights. $12.
And then turn the lights off and start experimenting with light.
I'm getting
that
selfie ring, too, because that really looks cool. I would like to have that selfie ring. If you've never used a ring light, go on Flickr somewhere and look at ring lights and see. They really can make a big difference in how you light a picture and be great for a selfie.
They instantly give you that glamour light. Yes.
You'll see it sometimes in people's eyes. You could tell there's a ring light because the reflection in their eyes. Maybe you should use this for repeat, which is our assignment, as Chris mentioned this week. Next week, our assignment review. I get 1 week extra, 1 week reprieve. Go take a picture. You have to be a Flickr member, but that's easy. It's free. I'm actually using Flickr more and more. Go to our tech guy group, submit it. Make sure you put the word repeat in the tag. And next week, Chris is going to pick 3 to take a look at. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
LEDs everywhere. That's hysterical. I, of course, ordered everything.
Here's my little... these are my little LED lights, like candy.
They're so cheap.
Yes, they are.
So cheap. But I think so just carrying them around, I mean, for emergencies too, you know, just having it on your keychain.
Well,
it's
you have
like
one
a flashlight.
Phone.
Yeah. Well, your phone does have one, that's true.
But this is like, yeah, you have 20 of them in an instant. I love that.
Is this a good one to get?
Pretty much all the same, yes.
$10. Clips onto your phone.
It takes a AAA battery, clips on every phone, and then you get that Kardashian look, exactly.
All right, I'm ordering that one.
they also come in pink, I guess, for the beauty bloggers.
I don't want pink. Bloggers. That is hysterical.
Yes.
Who knew?
This is an entire universe that just a couple months ago or a few months ago opened up to me. It's like, wow. And some of the LED lights I found on some Chinese sellers that you order from Shenzhen and they come 4 weeks later. But hey.
Lately, we've been getting a lot more packages from China. It's really interesting. You know, they're very different looking. And yeah, it takes a while, but still. They're cheap.
Yes.
All right, my friend. Great to see you. I'm glad you're getting your computer fixed.
Yeah, I should have it back tomorrow.
What was it?
Well, initially there was an insect in the screen.
Was it an iMac?
Yeah, 5K iMac.
Oh, man.
Insect in the screen. They replaced the panel, and now half a year later, there was again dirt in the screen, and no one has an idea how it got in there.
How are they getting in?
I have no idea. It was not sealed or something. Something
that's weird
got in there. Yeah, very weird. Anyway, it's hopefully fixed tomorrow. All right.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good one.
See you in a week. Take
care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo. That's the number. Back to the phones. Barb in Rancho Mirage, California. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I have this crazy thing that keeps popping up randomly.
I hate that.
Saying that my drivers need to be updated.
Okay.
It says detected driver issues and detected optimized issues.
Always be wary, as I think you are.
Yeah, because when I click on it, then they want me to pay.
Yeah, there you go. Good. Don't.
You have cost me more money.
Yeah, and your drivers are free. Don't pay.
Thank you.
That's an ad.
But it faked me out because it had all my computer information.
Yeah, but that's easy. That doesn't take any effort. That's all available. So these ads come through the browser. They're coming in through the internet. The browser, people don't probably know, but the browser has built into it the ability for any website to query the browser about all sorts of information. And so the browser is actually giving you up to these bad guys and giving your information to them.
Well, how do I get them to stop popping up?
Well, it depends where it's coming from. So is it always the same site or two or three?
Always.
Yeah. So that's a bug on the site. Not a bug, a feature. It's something the site's doing. So you can't stop that. But you can use a browser that blocks pop-ups. This used to be a big problem. This was a very common form of advertising. In fact, it wasn't just the pop-up. The window that would open up when you went to a website was the pop-under. The window that would pop under the web page when you closed the browser, there it would be waiting to jump on you. It was so annoying. So is it a respectable site you're visiting?
Well, it visits me. I don't visit
it. But I mean, it's coming. Does it happen when you're on your browser going to a particular website?
No.
Oh, no.
It doesn't. I don't think so.
Well, so you don't have your browser open at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I got Facebook and my email and a couple.
Well, that's your browser.
Yeah.
So that means your browser's open. So this is why I ask that. There are several ways something like this can happen. One, it can happen when you just go to a site. Let's go to a site, joesfenderrepair.com. And if there really is a real Joe's Fender Repair, I apologize. And Joe's Fender Repair either wants to make a little money on the side, or more likely, Joe's a normal, nice guy, but he's not a super swift security expert, and his site has been compromised. In either case, when you go to his site, you'll see his site, but you may also get rogue pop-up windows like that one. So that's one way to get that. That's why I asked if it happened every time you visited a particular site. The other way it can happen is your browser can be modified with a browser extension that will pop these things up at random no matter where you are. If you have your browser open sitting on Facebook, which you do, or on your email, which you do, the browser extension is running, and periodically it can pop up a window. So that's the second way you can get this. The third way you can get it, the one that's really more disturbing, is if your system itself has been compromised. And if the browser is completely closed and this happens, then that means there's some software actually in your computer that's doing this. So the way to fix it varies depending on where it's coming from. That's why the first thing you have to figure out is, does this happen when the browser's closed completely? There's nothing, like when you first...
You know what? It is in my I'm looking at it now. I just looked at, you know, what's in my...
You're looking at your extensions?
Well, just all of what's in, you know, what I could go click on when I go to the... I want to call it the start, but...
It's in your start menu?
Yes.
It says driver fixer. Does anybody else use your computer? Do you have a teenager using your computer?
No, she has her own, but occasionally she does.
Occasionally she does. Teenagers are notorious for this because our 15-year-old, I really had to train him. He would be playing a game, and then it would say, oh, you really want to add this mod to the game. And he'd go to a website, and he'd download this mod that would modify the game. But, of course, it also downloaded a bunch of other stuff. Well, and after every 3 or 4 months, I'd have to go on his system and clobber everything.
It says uninstall driver support.
Yes, too.
Okay.
You don't need that.
All right.
Especially the one that wants money. So that may fix it. So it may be... A lot of times this is the case that these are your is it your daughter, your granddaughter, your niece, your granddaughter. You know, I need to get something real quick. I'm going to go use Barb's computer, grandma's computer, and she downloads something like that. Now, most of the time...
Usually it's just from Amazon or something.
Yeah, it could be. But if you can uninstall it, it's not too malicious. The malicious stuff is stuff you don't have an entry for in the start menu and it doesn't have an uninstall, then that's considered malware.
Okay. Well, it did.
All right. Well, if it goes away, then cross your fingers. We're okay.
Okay. Well, thanks. And like I say, you've put me on. I got a Chromebook. I got
Good. See, this will never happen on your Chromebook, right? Unless you go to Joe's Fender Repair.
No. I love my Chromebook. I got it because of your recommendation.
Make your granddaughter use that. She'll say, Grandma, I'm not using that. I can't do anything on it.
Oh, okay.
That's the point.
I'll tell her. Leo, don't touch. Okay.
All right. Nice to talk to you. Have a great night, Barb. Take care. Bye-bye. The three different ways this can happen. A malicious site, there's not much you can do. It is probably a good idea, though, to turn on, and all browsers will do this now, pop-up blocking. You just look in your browser settings and say, don't allow pop-ups. That's just annoying, and that may just fix it by itself. If you get this a lot, if sites, and more sites are being annoying about this, there are blockers you can put on your system that are safe, extensions, free. There's one called uBlock Origin that I recommend. It's technically an ad blocker, but you can turn it off for sites that you want to support. You want to see their ads because I want to make sure they make money. And then leave it on, though, for strange sites that you go to, because not only does it block ads, but it blocks all sorts of malfeasance. One of the things that's very popular, or was now, I think it's starting to die down, when Bitcoin was worth so much money, there were Bitcoin miners, little programs that would run in your browser trying to make money for the guy who put it on there, actually trying to generate Bitcoins. And like leprechauns generating gold coins out of rainbows. But they worked and they'd make some money. The problem is they'd use up CPU cycles. They were not well coded. So that's one of the things, for instance, uBlock Origin disables, prevents. So putting that on there, that's not a bad idea. You can get that as an extension to Chrome, to Microsoft's Edge browser, to Safari. Just look in their extensions library. Be careful, though, because extensions are another way this can happen. It happens whenever you go to Joe's Fender Repair, but it could happen, just randomly as you're wandering around the web. That might be a browser extension. So it's a good idea always to look at your browser extensions and delete, uninstall anything that you don't know how it got there or you don't currently use. I had mentioned that one of the problems that has happened more recently is that perfectly legitimate browser extensions, the guy who wrote it, sold it. He's tired, doesn't want to do it anymore, sells it to another company. That company decides to use that giant installed base of extension users and puts advertising in there. So all of a sudden, the browser extension, this has happened a number of times lately, that was completely benign, was great, has turned into an ad engine. So if you don't use an extension or you don't know what it is, get rid of it. Uninstall it. Don't just block it. Uninstall it. And then, of course, if it's happening when there's nothing open, that's when you have to go through your system and find any malware that might be there. That's a little more challenging. We'll leave that as an exercise for another day. I'm glad we could find such a quick and easy solution for Barb. That's a great relief. Yeah. In fact, Synapse, there was an interesting story I read on Hacker News about Apple products. Guy said, I sold an iMac and I realized I could see the location of the buyer for months afterwards because even though I wiped the iMac before I gave it to him, it was still registered to my iCloud account. And so it showed up on Find My iMac, until at some point this guy finally logged into his iCloud account. So that's something to be aware of. That's an issue. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Maybe you saw the story this morning that Apple has decided to hand over the keys. Well, that's not quite right. They've decided to store the keys for iCloud in China for easy access by the Chinese government. And I think people are, Apple's giving in to China. They're given in. Well, of course, any company that works in any country has to adhere to the laws of that country or move out. China requires that any company that has cloud storage store not only the data in country, but also the keys to the data in country. Now, people, I understand why you're upset, but maybe this underscores something that maybe people hadn't really thought about. Apple also has the keys to iCloud's account in the iCloud accounts in the U.S., stores them in the U.S., and happily, well, maybe they aren't happy. I shouldn't judge that, but certainly easily hands them over to government when they receive a lawful warrant or subpoena. That's a known fact. So this is they do already in the United States exactly what they're going to do in China. And that's important, I guess, for you to understand, is that Apple has the keys to every iCloud account. We were talking earlier about Dropbox and how Dropbox, you know, if a rogue employee at Dropbox decided he wanted to look at your data stored on Dropbox, he could. Well, same thing for Apple. It's true for most cloud services. The keys are not your keys. They're created by the company's software and stored by the company along with your data. Just something to be aware of. In fact, you remember the San Bernardino terrible shootings in San Bernardino last year. Was it last year or 2 years ago? And the FBI asked Apple to unlock the phone of the bad guy. And maybe you don't remember Apple's response. We all remember Apple said no, but wasn't the whole sentence. They said no, but if you bring the phone to his house and it logs into iCloud and uploads all of its contents to iCloud, we'll be glad to give you the keys to that. Apple will and has handed over keys to the federal government, to the local governments, to anybody with a lawful subpoena, just as they will be doing in China. So while I understand people, you know, the headline from Reuters, Apple moves to store iCloud keys in China, raising human rights fears. It's not any different from what they do in the U.S. So I don't know. We're not worried about human rights in the United States. Oh, okay. That's why. This is how most cloud storage works. And it's why we were talking about how ways you could do this yourself. You could run your own cloud. There are lots of ways to do that. It requires some expense and hardware. Of course, you pay a monthly service for cloud storage, but you can control it absolutely. You could also encrypt your stuff before you put it on the cloud, on Dropbox or iCloud or Google Drive, which is the same, by the way. In fact, somebody was very surprised to learn that when you share documents on Google Drive, Google's automated software may look into the contents of that document and offer you advertising related to the contents of the document. This shocked somebody. A researcher said, I didn't know that would happen. Cloud storage is storing your stuff on somebody else's computer. And unless they specifically say, we don't have any access to it, it's encrypted and only you have the key. Unless they specifically say that, assume they, in fact, can look at it. They may promise you not to look at it. They may say, oh, no, we would never look at it. But remember, if the government comes to them, if there's a lawful subpoena or a warrant, in some cases, even without a warrant, they'll say, yeah, here's Leo's stuff. I'm always amused by these articles because I think there's the people have the general feeling that, oh, no, Apple protects your privacy. Yeah. I mean, in the sense that unlike Google and Facebook, they don't sell your information to advertisers, that's not how they make their money. They make their money selling you hardware and services. Google and Facebook don't sell you anything. Their business is advertising, so they use the data that you pay them. That's the cost of Google and Facebook. You give them data. They use that data to show you advertising. So in that sense, Apple has a different business model, but it doesn't mean that they don't know your stuff and then they won't share it given appropriate law enforcement requests. And they get to define what's appropriate, by the way. 8888 Ask Leo. Frank in Tennessee. Hi, Frank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, well, howdy. I'm surprised I got through.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I got a rather unusual little problem here. I am a retired engineer. My daughter works in China as a school teacher.
Oh, that's
and
that's
she
nice.
Has trouble Skyping me.
Yes.
So she brought me an iPad.
Oh, so you could use FaceTime.
Right. So now how do I learn to use this thing when I've been using for 30 years Windows and DOS?
Well, the first thing I'd say is because for 30 years you've been something using something that you did need a manual for, you may assume that you need a manual for the iPad. You've probably noticed it doesn't come with a manual.
Well, it's rather all these mysterious symbols on the screen.
There's nowhere. The theory is you'll just figure it out.
Yeah, but I've been figuring it out all my life, and I used to be a technical writer, and I may wind up writing my own manual for this thing, but I was hoping somebody had already thought about this.
So my friend David Pogue, who has noticed this trend in computing for not including manuals, has a whole series of books called The Missing Manual.
I've seen a couple of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure he has, yes he does, iPad, The Missing Manual. And David's a really good guy and a very good explainer in how things work. Let me just check and see how old this is. The general gist of it isn't going to change much. So you probably can run down to the bookstore or go to Amazon.com and order iPad, Amazon, The Missing Manual. Yeah, he's into his seventh edition now, so it's going to be fairly up to date.
Well, I knew if I could get a hold of you, you could start me in the right direction and save me a lot of struggling in the beginning.
You bet. And although, Frank, the irony is now, if you gave that iPad to a four-year-old,
He wouldn't need a manual.
No, he'd just sit down and go, oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen nonverbal kids who can't even talk yet know how to launch Netflix and start a Phineas and Ferb program on the iPad. They can't read a manual if they were one provided. So
and I'm an engineer, and
I know
60 years ago I started off as a technical writer.
I think some of it comes from our history is you had to read the manual to understand this stuff. And Apple's trying to design stuff that's intuitive, that you just kind of look at and you go, oh, I get it.
Yeah, but when a guy's sitting here with a Surface Pro next door to it that I've been using all this long.
Yeah, you understand Windows, right. You're looking for a start menu. There ain't no start menu.
I just want to define the terms that I don't have.
Yeah, I understand. Take a look at David's stuff. It's really designed for us. It's exactly acknowledging this problem that there's no manual. And it's not just, by the way, the Missing Manual series. It's everything. iPhone, Mac OS, Windows. Because David's right. Even Windows these days, there's no manual. Microsoft doesn't give you a manual. You have to figure it out. So David Pogue has a great series, The Missing Manual, and look for his Missing Manual for the iPad. There are actually quite a few books for iPad users because Apple, if you look at what comes with the box, it's not even a brochure. It's just a little thing. There is also an Apple Tips program that's probably on your iPad. You'll find that. There are a few things. If you were showed how to do a few things on the iPad, the rest would come fairly easily. For instance, and this is not intuitive. There's no way to know this. On a modern iPad, if you put your finger in the middle and you drag it down, you'll get a search bar that allows you to search for any app. So you could drag that window down, not from the top, but from the middle, drag it down a little bit, and type in tips. You'll find the Apple's Tips, My Tips app, that will give you some iPad tips. And you can have that launch on a regular basis. And there is, if you have the iBooks app, which you should on your iPad, there is, in fact, Apple offers, they don't tell you this, but they do offer in the iBooks app a free manual for the iPad. It's not very long, but it gives you pictures. It's easy to understand and probably gives you everything you'd need. It's an e-book in the iBooks store, in the iBooks app. So again, put your finger in the middle, drag down, type iBooks, and then you'll see the icon. You can tap that icon to open it. And then if you search in the iBooks app for the e-book, the iPad manual, somebody in the chat room, Alberta Guru, says it's a very easy and it understands, well-written. I'm glad you called, Frank. You've helped us for many years with your technical writing. Now we can help you a little bit. I love it. Neil LaPorte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. And for Frank and everybody listening, I will put, Frank, a link to that missing manual from David Pogue in our show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. John is in Troy, New York. He's our next caller. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm alive.
I'm alive. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a start.
Yeah. I just got coerced into buying a new version of Quicken.
Uh-oh.
They say Quicken 2015.
Wait a minute. They actually have a new version of Quicken, huh? Is it Windows only? Is it Windows?
No, Windows and Mac.
Wow. For some reason, I thought they were out of the business.
Well, I've been using them for a while, since at least 2006.
Oh, yeah. I used them for many years. Quicken was the king of home finance programs. They even put Microsoft's program Money out of business. They dominated. So I'm glad that they're keeping it up to date. Quicken 2018. All right. So what's your question? Yeah,
well, the problem is that I got 2018 because they said 2015 was going to basically lose all online functionality.
Yeah, that's their business model. For no apparent reason, forcing you to upgrade.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
So I bought a copy and installed it, and it worked once.
Okay.
And I've been having problems ever since. I try to use it, and it says that it's missing a couple of files, F1 or FIDIR.txt, TXT, and tax.scd. And the thing is that I haven't been able to reinstall it because it said I needed to reinstall it until it could uninstall an old version, which wasn't seen in my add remove programs.
So actually, I realize now why Quicken is still around, because it's not owned by Intuit anymore. They sold it a couple of years back to HIG Capital, and they're the ones who continue to update it. So it's no longer an Intuit product. Because Intuit, the reason I thought Quicken was, by the way, Quicken first came out 35 years ago. In 1983, when the first IBM PC came out, practically a couple of years later. And I used it for years. I, like many people, stopped doing it because I didn't want to do all the data entry. I started using Intuit's online product called Mint. But if you like doing it, yourself, and you like having it on your computer, I'm glad to see that HIG bought it. And I gather that they're keeping it up to date, which is really good news. However, You're asking the wrong person. You're going to have to call the Quicken folks, because I have no idea what's going on. It sounds like you had your old data on there. It sounds like it didn't fully import your old data into the new version.
Yeah, I've been chatting online with someone for the last couple of hours.
Wow.
Believe it or not.
Wow. And what do they say?
Well, they're trying to help me, and
yeah.
I finally.
Do you have a backup of your original Quicken data?
Yes, I do. I was finally able to reinstall Quicken 2018 by simply deleting the folder from my program directory, program files directory.
Oh, that's not uninstalling it. That's not a good way to uninstall a Windows program.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was afraid to do that. But like I said, the add remove programs in the control panel didn't see it at all, even though there were all kinds of...
I take it back. They haven't kept it up to date, and they haven't preserved it well. So here's the thing. This is my recommendation. It's kind of a mess now, I'm sorry to say. From now on, when you update, when you get a new version of a program, before you update, take the old version of the program and back up your data. Export it all. And Quicken, I think, I imagine it still uses the QIF file format. But whatever, you need to, at the least, copy the data files off. Now, Quicken always had a weird way of storing its data, as I remember. It didn't store it in a... The right thing to do with this is to separate the program and the data, have them in completely different folders, put your Quicken data in the documents folder, have a folder named Quicken Data, and that would make it easy to back up. But as I remember, Quicken doesn't do it quite that well. Maybe it does. Maybe they fixed it. So that's the first job. One is to get a clean copy of the old data. Then fully uninstall the old program. I suspect that this is what didn't happen. Then install the new program, clean, and import your data. If you're lucky, you can install the new program. It will see the old data and go, hey, fine, and everything will be fine. But you didn't get that. So that's why I think starting completely from scratch would be the right thing to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So now it's just one file? Yeah. Hey, how old is the computer? That's another thing somebody's saying is...
it's a Frankenstein computer.
Yeah, that may be one of the issues.
But I am running Windows 10 on it, though, so...
Yeah.
And I keep that updated.
It's, you know, deleting the program folder is not recommended is because it doesn't delete the whole thing. It just deletes what's in the program folder. But Windows programs change the registry. They put DLLs in other folders. So deleting that program file just doesn't do the job. And in fact, doesn't do the...
That was enough, though, to let me reinstall because it wouldn't reinstall at all before.
So Quicken offers, and this is my suggestion that you would get this from Quicken.com, something called QClean UI that will uninstall QClean UI. It's all one word that will uninstall and then let you reinstall it cleanly. So they must know they have a problem with uninstalling. So I would suggest going to that page. It's in the Quicken Help pages. Or you could I bet you if you Google QClean UI, you'll find
it. Well, I wrote it down. I'll look it up.
Google that. Download that program. Follow their instructions. And then, it has a large number of instructions here. And follow that process. My guess is that this is what you need to do to solve this problem.
All right. Well, thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. I'm sorry I couldn't be more helpful. And, honestly, I'm sorry that Quicken couldn't be more helpful. you think you have a Franken computer? Believe me, this is a Franken program. I bet you there's code in there from 1983. Wow. What a mess. We use QuickBooks. Who owns QuickBooks? Because we use QuickBooks for our corporate bookkeeping. Does Quicken, Intuit still own them, or did they sell that too? Yeah, that's still Intuit. So that's also confusing. So Quicken is no longer an Intuit product. QuickBooks is. Yeah, and I use TurboTax. I really like TurboTax. But Frankenstein was the doctor, not the monster. Yeah, but you're not saying your computer's a monster. You're saying it's a Frankenstein, which just means like Frankenstein's monster, it's patched together from a variety of different parts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Dale in Santa Monica. Hi, Dale.
Hi.
Hey.
So my question is, I do a garden tour, and it's fine when there are five or six people, but as the group gets larger, the people in the back can't hear me. Do you have a product that you could recommend for that?
Is it because you said it's a Bluetooth system?
No. Well, that's what we were thinking, but
oh, okay. So it's a wireless system of some kind.
No, we don't. Yeah, we don't have any system right now.
Oh, you don't have any system. They can't hear you because you're not loud enough.
That's right.
Oh, I thought you had some sort of system that was failing. Oh, yes.
No, we were thinking of getting a Bluetooth microphone and then a portable Bluetooth speaker and just, do it that way.
There are. I've been on 100 tours with systems designed for this. Do you have any budget?
No, but I think it's realized that it's a need, so
yeah,
it may materialize.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I go on tours with large groups, they will have the guide will have a microphone, a headset microphone that goes into a transmitter, a little box hanging around his neck, and then everybody on the group will get a little earpiece with a box. You can buy these on Amazon. In fact, I'm looking at one now. It says for tour guiding church, simultaneous translation, museum, coaching, assistive listening, etc., etc., etc. It's Chinese, but it has 32 boxes. Is that enough people? 32?
That sounds great.
Yeah. Comes in a nice metal box. This looks exactly like the ones I've used on many a tour and a trip. And it's exactly what it's designed for. The tour guide wears a headset, which broadcasts to these individual boxes. You give the each member of the tour has their own box and listens. This is a fairly common thing. Not cheap. You know, you're going to spend some money on this, but there are quite a few of these. There's TIVDIO, TIVDIO. This one has – actually, this one's not too expensive. For 10 users, it's $79.99. I haven't tried it. But boy, that's not a bad price. So yeah, there's a range.
So in Amazon, I just looked for a wireless tour guide.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I found one, and then customers who viewed this item also viewed, and I see about 100 more. Here's one for $588 that has it's 433 megahertz, 20 receivers, one transmitter. I like the 433 megahertz. That's a good frequency because that's going to travel around corners. You know, I would look at the reviews, though. That's the best way. I mean, that's one of the nice things Amazon can do for you.
All right, great.
Okay, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That works pretty well. Sometimes, you know, we'll go on cruises and so forth, and you'll land somewhere on a cruise, whether it's a riverboat or an ocean cruise, you'll land somewhere, you get off, and you have a tour guide, and she says, I'm on channel 15, and you each have one of these devices you hang around your neck, you put in the earpiece. Actually, I usually take the earpiece off and put my nice headphones in there so my ear doesn't hurt. And then she just talks in a normal voice, wanders around. There you see the church where the people fled during the rule of Dracula. And they all went in the church. And then she's just talking like that. And you could be standing 30 feet, 40 feet away. And she's talking in a normal voice and you're hearing it in your ear. It's actually great if you're going in a museum, if you're touring, I'd say a church, a cathedral, because you can wander and still hear the guide for a significant distance. But again, I would absolutely read the reviews. I have no opinion one way or the other on what's good or bad, but the reviews should help you on Amazon. To line three we go from Missoula, Montana. Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Well, good afternoon, Leo. Thank you very much for educating us and taking our calls.
Well, thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Hey, Leo. Hey, I got a let me give you a brief history on my device here. I acquired a Samsung Galaxy S8 in 2014. My carrier at the time was AT&T. After 2.5 years, I switched carriers to Consumer Cellular. Uh-huh. And it's been about a little over a year since I've been on Consumer Cellular, but they go off the AT&T tower also. So anyway, what's going on lately is I've been getting update notices when it's trying to update, and it prompts me saying need to free up space. There's not enough room to do updates. I've deleted pictures. I've deleted some stuff, data, to free up space, but it keeps, even after I...
Yeah. It's really frustrating because in that time frame, you see it less now, they were selling phones with a tiny amount of storage. I bet you it's got 8 gigs of storage. Yep. So that, it's hard to update with 8 gigs of storage.
Okay.
Your only recourse, the only way you might be able to get this updated is if you do a factory reset. So in your settings, you'll see a factory reset. Now, obviously, when you do that, you're going to wipe off anything that was on there. So you've backed up your photos, obviously, because you deleted them. Make sure you back up anything that's on that phone that you're going to want. The good news is, because you're using an Android device, you don't have to worry about things like contacts and calendars, because that's all synchronizing, at least, if not to Samsung, to Google. So that will restore. But go into the settings, do a factory restore. That will bring your phone, but don't reinstall anything. Just do the restore. It'll say, do you want me to restore your apps? No. Do you want me to restore your data? No. Don't do anything. That's going to give you the maximum amount of free space. Okay. Then try the update. If it still doesn't work, you're just out of luck.
Okay, and then also I got a second issue here. This week it started.
Yeah.
And it's whenever I open up my Google Chrome app, the browser, I should say, now I'm getting a Google warning. My Samsung Galaxy S5 is infected with the virus and immediately.
Yeah, that's not true.
You're right, and it's saying, you know, you have two viruses.
Yeah, that's just bogus, and, you know, we hear about these all the time. It's just somebody trying to scare.
How do I get rid of that?
Well, the good news is the factory reset will get rid of that. That's coming from something that got installed on the phone, or the browser has an extension installed. It's unusual to see that on Android. It might just be a site you're visiting. But the good news is, a factory reset fixes many ills, including.
I hear you. I want to let you know something too, Leo, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, I was listening to your episode yesterday on the radio, and then I wanted to, after you recorded it, usually it goes on to your
the website.
Website,
yeah.
The tech labs,
yep.
But it wasn't coming prompting up on my...
it will. Sometimes we take a little longer, maybe the editors...
Right. Yeah, so I just went to YouTube, you know, YouTube.
Yep. It's on YouTube.
Right away, so I just didn't know if it was my system or if you were aware of that or not.
I'm not aware of it, but it does happen. So the way this works is we record the show here in my studio, but also many radio stations also offer podcasts, and it's a good thing to support your local station. So check with them, check with iHeartRadio.
Sure.
But if you can't get it elsewhere, we offer it as part of either on the Tech Guy Lab site or on the podcast network. Twit.tv is the podcast network.
Great.
And you can subscribe in a podcast application. You can listen on an Echo or a Google Home, but you can also download. You can watch it on YouTube and download it on YouTube. We make audio and video available. But after I finish the show, Josh has to go get the show, or Victor. Sometimes I have different editors, and they take it. They cut out all the swear words, me tearing my hair out, frothing at the mouth. They cut all that stuff out, and then we put that up on the internet. So it sometimes takes time if there's an issue, if I were particularly, you know, nasty on a day. That's why I sound like a nice guy. They cut all that bad stuff out.
Yeah, it took 8 hours last
time. Yeah, sometimes it takes... yes.
I like the YouTube, because sometimes, you know, I do have a significant other, and I have this thing called the honey-do list.
Yes,
it gives you
something to do. Yeah.
So I can be listening to you all the time.
So do that. I think that's great. I appreciate you watching and listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That was a funny call.
Remove unwanted ads, pop-ups, and malware. This is Chrome on the desktop. Oh, no, it does have an Android solution. So it says that these come from apps. And then make sure you use a more modern Android device. You'll have much better security. They have this new Google Play Protect that keeps bad apps. And so we'll put this link in the show notes, techguylabs.com, on what to do if you're starting to see pop-ups either on your computer or Android. This is actually a good help site from Google. Thank you, chat room, for that one. That's Scooter X is, as always, very helpful. Very helpful. Thanks to our musical director, Michael Cozio, for this and all the weird music in the show today. Thank you, Michael. Good job. We appreciate it. Also to Kim Schaffer, who's answering the phones and preparing you for your appearance on national radio. Neil, Miami. Hello, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
I have
a question about discovering applications for the iPad.
Yes.
When I go to the Apple page for the iPad, at the bottom on accessories, they show an application for a timeline. I'm looking for what application is that. Having very hard time to find out a graphical for data analytics application for the iPad.
So you're looking for a timeline app. Right, tell me a little more about what you want to do with it. Is it for project management?
It's, yeah, something like that. I like that example they have on the Apple page for the example of how to make a movie. So all the different steps and colors.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. They don't say what app that is?
No, they don't say what it is. That's the problem.
Is it on the Apple website? Is that where you're seeing it, on the Apple website?
Yes, yes.
Let me go look and see if I can tell you. My first guess would be Omni Group's Omni Project, which is the king of project managers on iOS. So you're seeing it on the – is it on the iPad page or
– Yes, in the iPad page.
At the very bottom?
Down where it says accessories for iPad.
Ah,
they have
yes.
It right there.
And it's on the screen. Oh, look at that. That's fancy, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. Looking for that one, but I don't find it
anywhere. It could be made up, although I have to say Apple generally uses real apps in these photos because I know that because people who make these apps, how to make a blockbuster movie, are always hoping that Apple – I think this is the Apple calendar. What is that? Cardio boot camp. Analyzing
yeah,
the last
they have,
20 years.
Yeah, they have the two applications. That's the right.
Oh, I see. You're right. The calendar's in the right pane. All right, chat room. Anybody looking at this in the chat room and on the video, if you see it, or if you can go to the – it's apple.com. If you click the iPad link and you go to the bottom, on the right you'll see Apple's calendar app, but on the left, how to make a blockbuster movie. Now, usually – Apple puts it at the bottom of the page. They have a little footnote. Well, they don't, though, this time, of what apps they're using. Oh, this is a great question. We're going to find out. We are not going to rest until we figure out what kind of thing do you want to do. Is it a movie project you want to manage? Or?
No, it's a project for application development.
Oh,
but
perfect.
this visualization is fantastic. So
I know. Look at that.
I'm buy it, but I don't find it.
All right. So somebody will recognize this. The chat room is so smart. If not, we'll put this image on our page at techguylabs.com. That is really interesting. I don't recognize it off the top of my head, but I'll tell you the project manager that everybody I know uses on iOS is from it's not cheap by the way, is from Omni, the Omni Group, OMNI Group. It's called Omni Project. I would at least take a look at that and see if that'll do what you want. It's got you know, Gantt chart kind of timeline management and so forth. Somebody's saying I should try Google Image Search. That's a good idea, but I think it might be a little difficult to find. I'm going to leave that to you, chat room. See if you can figure out what is this app, how to make a blockbuster movie. You've got live action movie, a prequel or a sequel. You've got all these connections. It looks like an elaborate mind mapping. Mike Mann says he thinks he might have found it. Let me click this link and see if this is it. You guys are really smart, I have to say. The chat room, yeah, they call this. This is it. Wow. Chat room, you win. It's called Pixa, P-I-X-X-A, where data meets story. And this looks like exact. This is it. This is the program. There's your answer, P-I-X-X-A, Neil. And you can
find. No, I have it. That's not that one.
It's not. You have it? Their program.
Yeah,
I think their program is called Perspective.
I use it. I got that, but
you know
it's not
it.
The same.
You know it, but
yeah,
that's not the one.
It's
huh?
Similar, but it's not the same. So I was wondering if that has been done by Adobe Illustrator. Or
No. Like see, Apple, I think, is quite famous for not doing that. Look at this. Here is there's a website. So this is what Google Image Search came up with. Thank you, Scooter X. On Query Exchanger, which is a site where people ask questions. What is this app on Apple's site? Asked Luc LaBlanche back in June. And it doesn't look like anybody answered. Oh, so you don't think it's that Perspective program, huh?
No, I have it. I bought it. It's not that one. It's very similar, right?
It's very similar.
It's not the same.
All right. We are not going to give up. We are going to find this, Neil.
I appreciate
this. Thank you for asking. That's a great question. I will put that image up on our website. You can go to techguylabs.com, episode 1466. See if you can look at that and figure it out. And I'm going to keep, we'll find out. And Apple, I know there are people at Apple listening. We are in the Bay Area on KSFO in San Francisco. And I know there are people at Cupertino who listen. And James, I'll give you a link to this query exchange. James DeRuvo, who's in our chat room, he writes our show notes, says, can you give me the link to that? And I will put that in the show notes. And you can add it in your comments if you've got an idea. We will track this down. I suppose it's possible that Apple just used Illustrator or something and drew a picture. But it's been my experience in general. When you see apps on Apple Ads or Apple website, it's almost always a real app. In fact, as far as I know, it always is a real app. Should I tweet Tim Cook and ask him? I only have about a minute left. Let's see if we can get Edward in L.A. any help. Hello, Edward. Are you there, Edward? Leo Laporte. Oh, there it goes. Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Edward.
Hello, I'm glad I got to you. I've always been trying to get in touch with you. I don't know if somebody came up with this problem. You know how the keyless entry cars are today, you know, with the FOB?
Yeah.
And I heard that some unscrupulous people have an amplifier to amplify the sensors.
So you bet. It's a real problem for automobiles. You may have seen a 60 Minutes report where you could buy a $30 amplifier on eBay, stand next to the car. You might be inside at in your house or at work inside the office. The amplifier picks up the signal from your keyless entry fob and opens the door to your car.
Yeah, can you recommend a pouch shield?
You need something that's called, it's called an RF shielded pouch. They usually have metal mesh fabric. There are many of them sold on Amazon. I use one. They protect against any radio transmission. So when I get to work, I put my fob in this pouch, and it protects it. I'll put a link to a few of them on the show notes. They're cheap, $10. It's like an RFID-protected wallet. It's a great idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.